The following talk was recorded at Libra Planet 2023, Charting the Course, an annual conference on current issues in ethics, social justice, and technology from the Free Software Foundation. Libra Planet is a live conference, and speakers often use slides and other visual tools to assist their presentation. You can see the videos of these talks at media.libraplanet.org or on the FSF PeerTube channel. Libra Planet speakers do not represent the mission of the Free Software Foundation. We host speakers talking about their uses of free software in different kinds of political and commercial work. The FSF supports their freedom, but does not take a position on any political issues other than those necessary to uphold the principles of free software. Like all the FSF's work on behalf of the freedom of all computer users, Libra Planet is made possible by thousands of individuals. To keep our work going, please consider becoming an associate member via my.fsf.org/join. or by making a donation at my.fsf.org/donate. You can stay informed by subscribing to our newsletter, The Free Software Supporter, at fsf.org/fss. For more information on Libra Planet, please visit libraplanet.org/conference.
I think we're all set. So hello to everybody in the room. Welcome to this session on J Shelter for Browsing Securely. And without further ado, I'll let Libor continue his talk.
Hello. Thank you for your introduction. My name is Libor, and I'm working on a project called J Shelter. And this talk will be about this project, this browser extension. And I will tell you why you might wanna use this extension, how it can help you. And I hope that I will give you some additional thoughts about the web ecosystem as well. So let's start with our presentation, and let's start with a part that will focus on why we started developing J Shelter, and the first thing that everyone should understand is that at the moment JavaScript is omnipresent on web. If you look at the statistics about web pages, you'll see that the number of JavaScript increases over time, and a typical web page contains several or maybe even tens of scripts that are often needed to let the page work as intended. So one of the main problems with this JavaScript is quite known in the free software community for a long time. And if you haven't read the JavaScript trap yet, I strongly recommend you to read the whole essay. But in short, the problem is that the JavaScript code that is running in the browser is also running on your computer. It affects the processor. It makes some computations, and often it is completely out of control of the user. So basically, the creator of the web page creates, writes, develops this software, and you cannot tell, hey, browser, I want this software to behave differently. I want to change the software. I want to share the changed version, and so on. So one problem with JavaScript is that it takes or didn't give you the four freedoms that the free software community is about. But this is not the primary topic of JShelter. If you are concerned in running free software and you're fine with any free software, then please have a look at Libre.js, at this project, and maybe this project will help you. But what JShelter is about is that even free software can be malicious. So there are projects like, for example, Fingerprint.js, that is free software. Anyone has the four rights, so they can modify it and so on and so on. But this free software may be embedded in a web page and can work against the wishes of the user. So as long as the user do not take some steps, like I don't want this software to run on my machine, the software will run. And another issue that JShelter is about is that the mechanisms that are built in web browsers are not enough to protect the user from harms that can appear in a software. So take, for example, same origin policy. You might have heard about same origin policy before. So basically, the browser isolates pages belonging to different domains. And script of page X cannot directly access page Y. That's something that protects the information that might be accessible to the user. So, for example, if the user logins to some portal, another web page cannot read this information because the browser is connected there. But there are some possibilities that limits the same origin policy. One of these are web pages, for example, let's take a government web page. And what you can see in the slide is that this government page includes resources, including JavaScript resources from several other domains. And all these other domains, from the point of same origin policy, have the same privileges as scripts from the original domain. So if you access US Embassy .gov, as shown in the example, also scripts from Cloudflare, USA.gov, addis.com, and some other domains have the same privileges and can affect the page in the same way as the scripts from the US embassy. So there are also other problems like microarchitectural attacks. You might have heard about Meltdown or Spectre or Rowhammer and so on. I cannot go into deeply into this topic because it's quite complicated, but I have some pointers in my slides, so if you are interested more, please read the papers included here, or you can find some additional information on the web. But the main point is that this microarchitectural attacks allows to sidestep some defense mechanism of modern processors because they are buggy, and they can overcome in some circumstances the limitations and the artificial walls imposed, for example, by a browser or by an operating system. Some of you probably use some blockers, some web extensions that block that have lists of URLs that are malicious and that blocks scripts or maybe also other resources at these URLs, and that's fine, and I think that you should do this, but keep in mind that some papers like the one shown in the slides warn that the list that we typically use do not cover all the threats, and also it is quite easy to evade the list if you are interested in that. So you often can change the URL of the script, and now it's no longer on the blacklist. So the next threat are powerful APIs, like for example, service workers essentially act as proxy servers between your web, between your browser and the web that you access. They should be controlled by the creator of the web, but still they give additional possibilities to attackers like man in the middle, like TLS proxies in hotels, ad hoc networks, and so on. So beware of this powerful APIs. Another example of APIs that are quite powerful and not usually known are device sensor, so like an accelerometer, gravity sensor, gyroscope, and so on. So basically, if your web browser supports these sensors and these sensors are available in the device itself, of course, any web page can access and read data from these sensors, and this data can be misused, for example, to track the user or locate the user. And another threat is browser fingerprinting. So each browser is a little bit different, or most of the browsers are a little bit different. Some computers have some special fonts installed. There are different screen sizes, and so on and so on and so on. We prefer some languages, and so on. And every bit of this information cannot cannot identify your browser by itself. So I do have some fonts installed, and many other users have also these same fonts installed as well. But if we take more and more of these groups, and we dissect the users by all these combination, we can identify and re-identify the browser later quite easily. It always depends on the browser. Some browsers can be identified better, but the threat is here. So if you go to a test page, you can then see a test result like this, when the page tells you how identifiable you are. So I recommend that you try this or test like this if you didn't take any test in the past, and have a look how browser fingerprinting works, and if you are or if you are not identifiable. And if your question is okay, so is the threat real? Here in Europe, we have something that is called Transparency and Consent Framework, where ad-tech companies report voluntarily by themselves if they fingerprint the user or not. And as you can see, about 1 in 8 or so companies from 900, so over 100 of companies, actively report that they fingerprint users with some code running in the browser itself. So let's now focus on what JShelter can do for you. So right now we have Free Shield, JavaScript Shield, Network Boundary Shield, and Fingerprint Detector. So let's focus on these three, and let's start with JavaScript Shield. The main point of this shield is to provide something like a firewall between the web page and the browser itself. So we limit the powers of problematic APIs, and we change the values that the web page can access. So we modify the real value, or we provide a completely fake value, so completely different value than should be the real one. We might prevent an action that is connected with the API, like if the API should send some data and we think that it's not typically used by web pages, like the web beacon API, we just stop the action and do not continue. So these are the main defense techniques employed by JavaScript Shield. Right now, we modify or block about 100 APIs or more than 100 APIs. We were inspired by several works and several researchers, and also some APIs declined by big companies. So even Apple blocks or decided not to implement some of the APIs that we block. If you install the extension and you feel like you should control the browser should behave according to your need, you can fine-tune the behavior of JavaScript Shield. We created several groups of APIs that are connected, and you can fine-tune the settings on per domain basis. So basically, if you want, for example, make phone calls like in the big blue button, you can allow this page to access multimedia, but you don't need to access let other pages access these APIs. So you are in control. When I talk about browser fingerprinting, the problem was in that the browser or the device itself were quite unique, and we do not try to create a unique fingerprint for all our users, a common fingerprint for our users, because first of all, our user base is very small, so it wouldn't make sense. But also because it's quite hard to create a common fingerprint, because if only a single item is different from all the users, then you create a separate group. So we adapted an approach that is also used by Brave browser, and it was described by researchers in the past. And we want to create a unique fingerprint per session and domain. So these pixels here are a canvas. Let's describe the little eyes approach on this canvas. So canvas fingerprinting creates some effects with graphical card, and the idea is to detect the graphical card by its rendering scheme. So in this picture, this is not used for fingerprinting by itself, but I just demonstrate how the little eyes approach works. So in each of these columns, you have the original original value of red, green, blue, and alpha channel, and our extension changes the least significant bit of the color pixels more or less randomly, so that every time you access or the fingerprint that tries to fingerprint the user, the fingerprint is different. and int stays the same per a session and per a domain. So if you were visit two different domains, you have different fingerprint, and then you are not linkable. So this slide should demonstrate that you can see that the changes are different. A lot of our users try to hide in the crowd, so they want a common fingerprint. We don't do that because we don't think an approach like JShelter can work. But if you like this strategy, use Tor browser. I think that Tor browser is a good fit for this strategy. We also have a strict level that tries to limit the amount of information available about the system. So the idea is maybe you don't want the fingerprinter to know any data about your graphical card. So yes, we implement something like this, but this approach doesn't protect from fingerprinting. We also have wrappers around the sensors that I talked before. Another shield that we have in JShelter is network boundary shield. So here the idea is that we try to prevent web page to access internal network, and we implemented the defense, and later we learned that Threat Matrix, a script of this company that is, for example, running on ebay.com, tries to learn if you are running some applications and if you have opened some ports on your local machine. So this shouldn't be accessible in theory, but in practice it can be detected, and we tried JShelter, and it successfully blocked this attack. So this is this kind of attacks is what network boundary shield is for. And the last defense that is currently in JShelter is fingerprint detector, and this is something that tried to fight with browser fingerprinting with a different approach to the little lies. And we basically check what APIs are called, and if we think that the web page access enough APIs to create a browser fingerprint, we either warn the user, or the user can configure the extension to block future communication of the web page. So the web page can create, can compute a fingerprint, but it cannot upload the fingerprint to the server. So it cannot misuse the fingerprint. We compared our success or accuracy with some research projects that are abandoned, and our results are better or at least comparable to the other extension. And the main challenge is how to differentiate between a fingerprint and a benign behavior. So all the cases when we performed a little bit worse to the other extensions was in situation where it wasn't clear, like, is it a fingerprint already or not yet? And let's finish my talk. I hope I can spare some minutes on this, on our current status. So, as you can see, in Firefox, we have more than 500 daily users. You can see two spikes of new users. It was the first one were when Free Software Foundation communicated their cooperation with this extension, and the second one here was when we announced our talk on LibrePlanet. So if we have some users in the attendance, I thank you for trusting our software, and let's hope that we do not or you will be pleased with the extension. Besides Free Software Foundation, we cooperate with Giorgio Maone, the author of NoScript. So you might have heard about this extension. If not, it's also an extension that I recommend you. Of course, we are free software, so you can access the source code. We have a paper that has a lot more detail than I managed to squeeze into this presentation. If you do not want to read the paper, you should probably read at least the FAQ and maybe have a look at the open issues, because I think that the extension is already beneficial, but we have some open issues that you might wanna know. So far, we were mainly founded by NLNet Foundation. So very big thank to them for funding this work. And if you are a researcher and also wanted to cooperate with us, we are open to this kind of cooperation. For example, there should be a call in Europe from Horizon. So if you feel like this is something that you want to cooperate with us, please let us know. And how can you help? I think if you install JShelter and report bugs, that would be quite great. If you can test the extension or help us to develop more, then that would be even more beneficial. You can read our mailing list. Let us know if you want to join. And as I said, we are looking for cooperation. So thank you for attention. And now let's go for the questions.
Okay, I think we have about 10, 13 minutes for questions, and if anybody in the room wants to ask anything.
Hi, thank you for your presentation. You had one slide where you recommended that people check their browser and see how unique it is or something like that. What was the URL you recommended people evaluate their browser with that?
Yeah, sure. I hope that the slides will be available for you and the presentation. So you can copy the link from there, you can see here coveryourtracks.eff.org and or miunique.org. If you try to search for browser fingerprinting. There are also other websites. And as I said, the problem with fingerprinting is that there is no definition like this is a fingerprint and this is not. So if you have a look at more sites, you might, or more testers, you might found that some use some additional APIs, and that's also one of the problem of that JShelter tries to face with the little eyes approach, because even if we do not cover all the APIs, if we modify a little bit, at least some of them, we should or we hope to confuse the fingerprinters enough so that cannot uniquely identify the browser.
Right. So earlier in your talk, you mentioned, or you had a slide that contained U-Matrix, which is an incredible tool for blocking web content. One limitation that I've found with that, though, is so in a situation where, like, if you block everything and you strip a page down to just HTML and, like, selectively allow JavaScript as you need it, it's granular enough to, like, use JavaScript only from certain domains, but not granular enough to select the maybe one or two script that you actually need. It'll just do the entire batch from that subdomain. Would you say that JShelter is useful in a scenario for, you know, further filtering that, or would it conflict, you know, running JShelter behind something like U-Matrix?
Yes. I think that you understand it quite well. So with U-Matrix or NoScript that I also mentioned, you can control which domain can inject the JavaScript code, but you cannot control the code further. And we see JShelter as a second step to an extension like U-Matrix or NoScript. So we think like you should filter first based on domains. You should also use the blocker extensions that can also help you. And then if you need to enable some domains, JShelter should help you to prevent some attacks that I mentioned. Like, for example, the browser fingerprinting, it will modify the APIs or detect attempts to fingerprint you. Is that enough?
Is that useful for you? I tried to do that previously with Libre.js a number of years ago, but there were some issues. But yeah, thank you.
Are there any particular blockers or browsers that you would recommend in combination with, or that you should avoid in terms of other privacy enhancing things that would go along with JShelter?
I think that most of the developers use primarily Firefox or some derivatives. So I would recommend using Firefox, or JShelter was created mainly for Firefox users. We try to help also Chromium-based browser users. And we have a project right now with NLNet on MV3, on Manifest V3. It's some it's an approach to change how web extension interacts with the browser. So this is something that we right now fear would limit the powers of extensions like JShelter. So right now, JShelter is only slightly worse in Chromium-based browsers, but we will see if we manage to keep this to the end of the year.
That wasn't quite what I was asking. I'm running Firefox most of the time. I'm more like, of the various add-ins that you can get for privacy enhancing, are there any ones that we would recommend avoiding or particularly using in addition to JShelter? I know you mentioned NoScript, but like uBlock Origin and Privacy Badger and things like that.
Yeah, so I would definitely recommend, or first of all, I think that I might not mention all of them, but if I remember correctly, we have a FAQ on this, but I think that you should use a blocker. uBlock Origin is quite great for that. You should use an extension like uMetrix and NoScript. And there is an extension that that Decentralize, I think it's called. That's also something that might be useful. And one problem with some extensions with in cooperation with JShelter would be if they also try to affect browser fingerprinting. The two approaches could be in conflict, so this might be something that you might want to avoid or inspect more.
And just there's a couple of questions from the IRC chat, and decentralized apparently is now local CDN. But there's a question from IRC, which was, is JShelter's behavior itself fingerprintable? Can I determine if a client is using JShelter by trying to discover what the client won't let me do?
I can hear some background noises. We basically try as much as possible to protect our users and do not apply any fingerprintable or try to limit the web pages to detect JShelter and JShelter code. But of course, we have some side effects. So for example, if we apply the little lies to the canvas, like I shown on these two slides. If a web page creates a white canvas and then reads that it is not white, the behavior is detectable. But the behavior is the same to the Brave browser. And yes, so you should be aware that you will become somehow fingerprintable, or if someone is focused on detecting this kind of users, yes, they will become fingerprintable, but We are trying to do our best to limit these possibilities.
Okay, thank you so much. That was, I think, all the time that we had for questions. Another round of applause for our speaker. Thank you.